Radio Prague News.
The Czech Interior Ministry has launched a new webpage dealing with migration. Heat waves in the summer played a decisive role in the increased number of traffic accidents. And the annual fundraising drive known as Svetlushka has begun. The Czech Interior Ministry has launched a new webpage focusing on migration. The page is aimed at offering up-to-date information about the situation and capacity at migrant detention centers and camps in the country. According to information released, more than 1,100 migrants have been brought to centers, with some 264 places remaining. The ministry has plans for additional facilities to be added across the country in case the number of refugees entering the country grows. The aim of the new webpage, Interior Minister Milan Chovanec said, was to calm the situation and prevent panic. He said in his view, the country was handling the migrant crisis well and was ready to tackle future challenges. Heat waves in the summer took their toll on Czech motorists, the head of the country's traffic police, Tomáš Lerch, has said. Unusually hot temperatures had a negative effect on drivers, he elaborated, causing tiredness and a lack of concentration. Some 150 people lost their lives in traffic accidents in the summer months, some of them in head-on collisions, and there was an increase in the number of accidents with multiple fatalities. Meanwhile, 500 people suffered serious injuries. In all, the police registered some 150,000 road accidents during that period. The annual fundraising drive, known as Svetlushka, organized by Czech Radio's Endowment Fund, began on Monday and will continue until Friday, September the 11th. Funds raised go to help the blind and heavily visually impaired. The charity has been organized by the Czech Radio Fund for more than 10 years. Passers-by can purchase firefly antennae, whistles, or armbands to show their support. In other news, the Czech Republic ranks among five EU countries with the fastest-growing industry this year, recording industry growth by 5% year-on-year in January to July, the Czech Statistical Office said on Monday. In the first half of 2015, faster growth in industry was registered only in Ireland, Hungary, Malta, and Poland. Turning to sport, the Czech Republic secured a spot at Euro 2016 on Sunday with their 2-1 win over Latvia. They were aided by the fact that in a separate match, the Netherlands lost 3-0 to Turkey. In the first half of their match, the Czechs got goals from Limberski and Darida. They led 2-0 until the 73rd minute when Latvia got on the scoreboard. Latvia then poured on additional pressure but were not able to get the equalizer. After the final whistle, goalkeeper Petr Čech told Czech TV the match, namely the second half, had been a difficult one, but said the team deserved the result. It is the sixth time in a row that the Czechs have qualified for the European Championships. I'm Jan Wellinger. You'll find more news at radio.cz.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, with me, Ruth Franková. Coming up in today's program, with the Czech Republic and the rest of Europe still in the throes of the ongoing refugee crisis, we speak to one of the many Syrian immigrants now heading to a new life in Germany. We have the roundup of the latest Czech sports news, and later on in the program, weekend cottages are a huge part of life in this country. But how has Czech people's relationship to their second home changed over the years? We meet an expert in the field. All this coming up, so please stay with us. According to Czech Interior Minister Milan Chovanec, around 60 Syrian refugees have applied for asylum in the Czech Republic so far this year. Meanwhile, far greater number of refugees are traversing the country from Hungary and then Slovakia to get to cities inside Germany, which is anticipating around 800,000 asylum applications this year. Dominik Yun travelled with one group of Syrian migrants boarding a train in Prague's central station bound for Berlin. They related a story of imprisonment in Slovakia, being deprived of communications with the outside world, and even tear gas being used against small children.
It's 6:30 in the morning on Saturday, the 5th of September. I'm sitting in a train which is just departing Prague's Hlavní nádraží, and it's heading north towards Germany, first stopping at Dresden and then its final destination of Berlin. Sitting all around me are a group of, I would say, around 100 Syrian refugees, comprising men, women and young children. They all have rather battle-worn expressions, although their spirits are high and they're often laughing and perhaps relieved that they're about to travel towards the proverbial promised land. One of the group, a man in around, I would say, his late 30s, has agreed to sit with me and relate to me their story. Thank you for agreeing to speak with me. First, if I could ask for your name.
My name is Samir Kalago.
How did you get to Prague first, if I may ask?
It's my long story. I'm first go from Syria, Turkish, Greek, Macedonia, Serbia, and Hungary. But I don't live in Hungary.
Because there's been now tension in Hungary because many refugees are stuck in the station. The police won't let them go, so there's not... I suppose your group doesn't feel particularly welcome in Hungary, is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. After this, I'm go to the train, I'm ticket Budapest, Berlin. But I don't know the train go in Slovakia. You understand me?
Yes.
Yeah. More Syrian people catch police in Slovakia, and 2 months and a half we are imprisoned in Slovakia. We don't know why. We are going to Syria war, go to Europe because we need base, we need work, we need home, we need work with Europe's people because this country's freedom, this country freedoms.
Yes.
I don't know Slovaks, 2 months and a half we are present.
So the feeling is that Germany is more welcoming to refugees?
Yes, I feel.
Because many Syrians, for example, you wouldn't consider asking for asylum in Czech Republic. You're just going through. It's definitely Germany that you feel is welcoming.
We so all people Syria feel welcome to Germany.
How big is your group? How many of you are traveling together?
About 100 and a half. No, Syrian. That's Syria. About 100 Syrian go to Slovakia and they're present. And this
in like a camp, in a migrant camp, yes.
No camp, this prison.
A prison.
Because no internet, no any communication with the world. And my family know where I and all. And we are angry. We are angry because why you are in prison?
So you're aware that there's a kind of some countries or there's some tension, maybe xenophobia, there's fear. Like how are your group responding when some people say, "Who are you? We don't want you." You know, maybe
angry people, angry Syrian people in the camp. Police, big police. The gas, you know, gas.
Yes.
Gas.
Yes.
People, children. Children, 1 year, 2 years, gas in Slovakia.
Yes. And then you travel to Czech Republic.
After this, two months and a half, we are stay in Slovakia.
Right.
And you see in TV in Germany, you welcome in Syria, no problem. And press your fingers, no problem. You come. After this, Slovakia go in Czech.
Yes, yes.
This yesterday.
Now you're heading to Berlin.
Yes. Yesterday you free in prison. Yeah. This all this people. Yes.
So tell me about conditions in Syria. Do you feel like you have to leave at the moment because of Assad and ISIS and the country is bad state?
Yes, yes. We are the people, Syria people. We can't know what we are do. Because you see Daesh, Assad, free army, more army in Syria. You don't want, don't know what to, I go, where I go. No save, no place save,
yes.
no save list in Syria.
What is your hope for the future, for yourselves and for Syria? You hope that you will find home in Germany and maybe in a few years Syria will be okay again?
I want peace. I want peace to all the country in Syria. And I like Germany because it's the best country to Syrian people. The Syrian people like Germany. And like every country is welcome to Syria.
Dominic Yoon talking to a Syrian refugee on a train in the Czech Republic heading to Germany. The conditions in detention facilities for migrants not only in the Czech Republic but neighbouring Slovakia and Hungary, which serve as transit countries, are now under close scrutiny. The migrants, who are forced to spend several weeks in detention under tight security, accuse the authorities of imprisonment, while the authorities claim all is according to the law. Over the weekend, Czech Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka visited one of the country's three asylum centres, Zastávka u Brna in Moravia, to check up on the conditions in which refugees are held. Daniela Lazarová has more.
The country's three detention centres, one north of Prague and two in Moravia, are filled to 90% of their capacity, which is 1,100 beds. They house migrants from Syria who are now being released in groups and allowed to continue on their way to Germany, Afghanistan, Pakistan and Iraq. When the Czech government delegation arrived on the grounds of the fenced-off detention centre near Brno, the mood was stormy and the Prime Minister faced a volley of complaints.
No mobile, no internet, no anything.
No anything.
We want to be. I am a human, not animals.
We want to go to Germany. It's about 2 months we are here like prisoners.
Migrants who cross the country's border illegally are detained here for several weeks before being returned to the country from which they entered the Czech Republic on the basis of readmission agreements, or the country where they have requested political asylum. Many have no IDs, in which case the Czech Foreign Police needs to ascertain their identity and question them before deciding how to proceed in line with the law. Families are kept together, but they have their mobiles confiscated, and unlike those who file for asylum in the Czech Republic, illegal migrants waiting to be extradited do not have access to the internet. After getting a tour of the facilities, Prime Minister Sobotka said he saw no reason for complaints.
Admittedly, tension is high, and the people who are here are not here of their own free will. They are here because they have violated Czech law.
However, while the Interior Ministry and the Foreign Police claim that all is as it should be, the Prague-based Organization for Aid to Refugees claims otherwise. Its director, Martin Rozumek, says the Prime Minister was taken to a model facility.
You can't compare the conditions in Biela and in Zastávka u Brna, and it's true. If the ministry wants to receive a good assessment or wants to make an impression, they always send the visitors to Zastávka u Brna. But I think the people should come to Biela Jezová, because what we could see in the detention center in Biela Jezová was a disaster. Hungry children, bar food, no access to mobile phones. They have to pay for the services in kids. So in monthly, the bill could be of 7,200 Czech crowns for one person. I think it's a shame.
Illegal migrants are not given access to mobile phones and to the internet. Why are mobile phones being taken away, and why do they not have access to the internet?
I don't understand why the government or the police is not allowing access to mobile phones and to internet, because I don't see any problem with it. We have troubles that people are unable to call their relatives and family at home back in Syria or in Germany. And I don't really know the reason, because we were always told for security reasons. But what does it mean? I think it's bad behavior to somehow deter all immigrants to come to the Czech Republic. And I think this is the main purpose of the harsh conditions in detention, to deter all the others to come.
Martin Rozumek of the Organization for Aid to Refugees, ending that report by Daniela Lazarová. But now Ian Willoughby has the roundup of the latest Czech sports news.
We begin today with football, and the Czech Republic have booked a place at the European Championship in France next year, with two qualifying games to go. The Czechs and Iceland are both on 19 points at the top of Group A and can no longer be caught by third-place Turkey. Pavel Vrba's team secured a berth at Euro 2016 with a hard-fought 2-1 home victory over Kazakhstan on Thursday and an away win over Latvia by the same scoreline on Sunday evening. The first of the Czechs' two goals in the latter game came from David Limberski, who said few had fancied the team to achieve qualification so soon.
Which one of you would have bet on that? Nobody, right? To finish ahead of Turkey and the Netherlands two rounds from the end is unbelievable. Even though our performances weren't always ideal and our play was a bit creaky, our teamwork was strong. Two-thirds of the squad are from the Czech League, which is really great. It shows the high quality of the competition.
Limberski previously played under coach Vrba at Victoria Pilsen and was fulsome in his praise for the Czech manager.
The boss is a child of fortune. He simply has the karma for it. Wherever he goes, he's successful. That's one of the reasons I'm glad to be in the national squad, because you're almost always guaranteed to enjoy success with him. We appreciate that, and we're going to capitalise on it in the future.
Rowing now, and Ondřej Synek took gold in the men's single sculls at the World Rowing Championships at Aigues-Belette in France on Sunday. Though the Czech had triumphed in three of the previous 4 years, including in Amsterdam in 2014, few expected him to retain the title this time out, after a season in which he failed to win once. His coach Milan Dolacek Sr. explained how he and Synek had turned things around at the right moment.
At the end of the day, I said we had to aim high. We trained thoroughly and things got better. We took out the old boat that he won on last year. Everything worked out. After a training camp in Italy, we discovered an old centre on Slappy Dam where they cooked really well and looked after us.
And that's all the sport for today.
Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Now 20% of the houses in the Czech Republic are country cottages, and many people visit theirs every weekend in the summer. But has the position of the chata changed over the years? Ian Willoughby discusses those issues with Dr. Jiří Wagner in this week's One-on-One.
This summer, hundreds of thousands of Czechs have spent regular weekends and longer vacations at their chata or cabin or chalupa or cottage in the country. Such second homes are a deeply embedded aspect of Czech life. But what are the roots of the tradition? And how has Czechs' relationship to their country house changed since the fall of communism? I discuss those questions and more with the leading expert in the field, Dr. Jiří Wagner of the Geography of Leisure Research Centre at the Faculty of Science at Prague's Charles University.
The historical roots are two. The major one, since the end of the 19th and the beginning of the 20th century, it's the same, similar to the Western societies. The luxury villas and weekend houses of the rich people from urban zones. But the other one, it's very specific for our conditions, and so-called tramping movement coming from the 1920s. It was inspired by re-immigrants coming from the States, from Canada, and it's tied with the lower society, lower classes of the society, with the young workmen who spent Saturdays evenings and Sundays bumbling in the surroundings of the cities and then starting pitching the tents, first wooden cabins, gathering together. So there are two roots, pre-war roots, and after the Second World War, there were other origins of the second movement of the second homes. It means chalupaření. The first one, tramping, was a source for chataření. But chalupaření arose mostly because of abandoned houses in peripheral border areas after the expulsion of Germans after the Second World War, and since the 1960s, 70s, due to socialist industrialization and urbanization. many young people moved to the cities, and they were abandoned houses or just houses of their grannies left in the villages, and people started to use them as recreational houses.
And you were telling me earlier that many of these villages would simply have died without the cottagers, the weekend people.
Yeah, that's right. Not only the simple houses, which are maintained by the cottage users and cottage owners, but the whole villages in the periphery areas. We have some villages where 80-90% of the dwellers are just cottagers, second owners. Without them, it would be completely impossible to survive in the village. They start again, they restart the social life, they organize cultural events, sport events, together with the residents, and they also cooperate with the local representatives, local authorities.
The Czech Republic has an unusually dense railway network. Has that also contributed to the popularity of cottages?
It had contributed a lot in the first era, in the 1920s, especially for that tramping movement, because it was a cheap and dense railway structure. So dozens of thousands of people of big cities were able in an hour or half an hour to get away of rush, dirty cities to the very nice nature preconditions and play themselves trappers, Indians, cowboys in the romantic valleys, which were tied together with the railway connection.
I was interested to read that until the early 1970s, Saturday was a working day here, so I can't really understand how people were going to the cottage and still working, being in Prague or being in the city until Saturday afternoon. How did that work? Did they go for one night only?
Yeah. Firstly, until the late of the 1960s, it was just one night, Saturday evening and night. But later on, there were hundreds of thousands of people escaping from the cities. In fact, it was an escape of the totalitarian regime, because the stress of the regime was not so big in the countryside. Well, I think it was quite clever of the communist regime, if not to support, to tolerate the Second Home Movement, because people were spread in the countryside. They lived their own personal lives at the second homes, and they left back to the cities late Sunday night or Monday morning to start working, but their feelings were much more in their cottages.
And also their energy. I believe a lot of people simply went to work and didn't do anything. And then at the weekend, they would be building and improving their homes.
Yeah, we should realize that it was the only possibility to own something, personal car and a cottage or a cabin. Of course, in the villages, you were allowed to have a family house, but you were not allowed to own an apartment in the city. So in fact, people realized themselves, their ideas, much more freely at their cottages. And of course, it was not possible to travel abroad so easily. And also the system of commercial tourist facilities was not developed so much. So cottages were the only possibilities, or one of the only possibilities, how to escape of that stress of the regime of the cities.
Typically, how do the people who live permanently in these places view the people who come for the weekend only or for a couple of weeks in the summer?
We should divide two types of the localities. Those dense chata localities, weekend houses, there are some problems, some barriers between the communes, the residents, and the weekend comers. There are also big environmental loads. But we conducted quite a lot of research in peripheral areas, in border areas, where the cottage owners really contribute to the social life. And it seems that in those localities where the cottagers have been commuting for many years, the dual society doesn't exist so much. So people cooperate together in organizing the social life.
Many foreigners who come here get the impression that city life in the Czech Republic is quite atomized, that people don't socialize so much. Is it different in the country, in these villages and places where these cottages are?
Well, especially in the history, I think it was one of the main reasons to escape of the cities. Not only the political press, but the possibility for people to gather quite freely in the countryside at their cottages, sitting at a fire camp, playing guitar, or, of course, also planting vegetable and fruit because of the shortages at the market. Nowadays, I think it's also a big chance for youngsters, for young groups to go away of the busy cities and to do lots of sport activities. I don't mean just maintain the cottage, but For example, mountain biking is very popular, or playing some group games. We should realize also that some typical games as volleyball, nohebal or tennis, in fact, started to be played in the tramping communes. So the sport life is very active by now as well.
When I first came here in the 1990s, I was often amazed at how quiet Prague was at the weekend. I used to live in Vršovice. There was a pub that closed at the weekend because people were going away so much. And I often felt that it kind of negatively impacted Prague, that it made Prague kind of dead.
Well, I think that with the boom of tourists coming, foreign tourists coming into our country, Saturdays and Sundays life in Prague is busy quite a lot too. But it's right that maybe several hundreds of Czechs are even now leaving big cities, and Prague especially, to their cottages. Because we have about 500,000 of second homes in our country. It means each fifth house, each fifth dwelling is a second home used just for leisure and recreation. But with the new technologies and telemobility, second homes now doesn't serve only for recreation. There is a change for so-called multiple dwellings. People can, in fact, transfer their office activities into their cottages with internet, with mobile phones. So they spend more time also during the working days. So it's quite difficult now to differ between primary home and second home. And it's a trend also in the Western countries.
And otherwise, how have Katašani and Kalupašani changed since the fall of communism?
Our research started after the fall of the communism, and there were some ideas that there would be a big changes in this movement. They were just after the collapse of communist regime. After 1990, people got the chance to travel abroad, to get learned about foreign countries. But especially young generations, after getting married, after having their own babies, they could see that having a chance to stay not far away of your resident house in nice nature preconditions and to live your family life in a nice and healthy conditions, it makes sense. So it seems it's getting back.
But I presume people simply have less time and less energy for their cottages than they used to.
Well, they probably don't commute so frequently, and not for such a long time, not for 2 or 3 weeks during the summer. But with the heavy automobilization and with possible commuting to almost all places in Czechia in 2 or 3 hours, you can go for your cottage for just 2-3 days. And I mentioned the telemobility. You can also work at your cottage. You can do other activities than just recreation.
Tell us finally, what is your own relationship to Katašani or Kalupašani?
Well, my family has never had an own second home. But after I got married, I got a chance to commute to both types of our second homes, to a very simple wooden log cabin at the Berounka River, in a very romantic setting, without any electricity, without any water supply. And the other chance was to use my father-in-law's cottage at a typical farming region, 90 kilometers easterly of Prague. So now, having my own family, it's a perfect possibility to change the place for bringing up my children and be with my family together.
And which do you prefer, the place with no electricity or the nicer house?
Of course, recently, having no babies, it was, and having no own flat, it was a great chance for so-called weekend marriages with my future wife. So that cabin, very romantic cabin, was excellent. But having babies, of course, more infrastructure, more facilities is needed. So I think that the village house is perfect for us. And this afternoon, I'm leaving for this cottage also to meet our grannies and to enjoy the life, all the family together.
Dr. Jiří Wagner of Charles University, who was speaking to Ian Willoughby in this week's edition of One on One. And that brings us to the end of our English language broadcast. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.